of sales into account. It is solely based on the population compared to the number, the physical number of licenses. But certainly it's something that grocery stores are something that we would assume would be sort of the common sales for alcohol for this type of license. And so it's certainly something that staff took into consideration and we found to be kind of exactly what we would be expecting for this type of usage in this area.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, council? Okay, we'll open up to the public for any questions on this item. Seeing none, we'll bring it back. Anyone online?
No, sir.
Okay, Pro Tem Gregory.
I'd like to move that we approve resolution 26XXX, that the public convenience will be served by the issuance of type 21 ABC license Trader Joe's located at 2457 Golden Hill Road.
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Strong. Discussion? Call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Councilmember Bash?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, Sam, I know you're a new team player, but I hope your arm's strong enough. We're going to do a double header here tonight because you got the next one.
Well, let's keep on going. Sounds good.
Yeah, okay. Lead into item three. That's another one for 2401 Golden Hill Road.
Exactly. Yes, so this will be another discussion of a PCN for the mobile gas station at 2401 Golden Hill. And if that sounds familiar to you, it is right basically neighboring to the spots where the Trader Joe's is being built. And so, yes, so this is the mobile gas station on the corner of Golden Hill Road and California Highway 46, again zoned as a C3 commercial area. And so this one differs a little in terms of there is already an existing license at this spot. D&M Gas Facility, which owns the mobile, has held a type 20 license for this property for over 20 years, since August of 2005, and which authorizes beer and wine sales. Their request to City Council tonight, it would be to transition to a type 21 license, which would allow for the addition for the harder alcohols. This is based on a customer demand, according to the ownership. Similarly, this is obviously the same census tract in the same area that we were just looking at. And so ABC has determined that there is that undue concentration, and they have tasked City Council to make the public finding, or the public convenience necessity finding for this request. And so this is the general floor plan for the interior of the store. The applicant has noted that most of the harder liquor would be kept behind the sales counter, just because obviously you wanted to have it secure, just in case. That being said, ABC licenses do, once they're approved, allow for, you know, flexibility in terms of where you store your alcohol within the store. And the exact location of where this alcohol would be stored on a long-term basis would be something that the applicant would like to explore over time. So as we talked about earlier, this is the census tract that we're looking at. There are four licenses that are considered reasonable by ABC, and there are currently six. The difference is this one would convert a existing type 20 to a type 21. And so in this instance, there wouldn't be an increase in the number of licenses. It would just be a change from one type to another. And this was something that was part of staff's findings while we looked at this. The change from one license type to another does not, in the strictest terms, create a more undue concentration because it would be the same number of establishments that are selling alcohol within the area. The request to sell alcohol under the type 21 is also something that is consistent with businesses. There are no similar gas station stores in the census tract itself that sell harder liquor, but there are gas station markets in our city that do operate under the type 21 license, most notably the Chevron on Niblick Road, as well as the One Stop on Spring Street on the south side of town. As I said before, food and beverage sales are allowed within the C3 zoning district, so this would be consistent with municipal code regulations. And similarly to the last project as well, the action is not a project under CEQA and would not have anything pursuant to those guidelines. And so the options presented before you are the same, essentially. The first would be take no action, the second being approving the resolution that would determine the PCN would be served by the issuance of a Type 21 license for this establishment. The third would be to deny the request for the PCN based on the findings, or the fourth would be to provide alternate direction back to staff. And based on our findings, we would recommend option two, which would be approving the PCN as requested. And so based on that, I will open it up to questions.
Very good. Thank you, Sam. Councilman Bausch.
So I'm not sure if it matters if you're doing this by geography or not, but there are two other gas stations that also sell hard alcohol. Mm-hmm. Wayside on Creston Road. And further out Creston Road, I'm not sure. It used to be a 7-Eleven, I think. I'm not sure what it is now. Circle K, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Does that impact ABC's decision? Do they have final arbitration on this?
Final arbitration would be with City Council, based on whether
ABC is going to go with what we recommend.
Exactly.
Thank you.
ABC defers to City Council in terms of final decision.
Thanks.
Pro Tem Gregor.
So also Third Base is a big one.
Yeah, on Spring Street.
Yeah,
15.
A major retailer. But there's no other 21 licenses in the vicinity for the gas station style.
Not in terms of the census tract, no.
Thank you.
Okay. Good on questions, Council. Open up the public. Anybody have any question on this item, please come forward. All right, bring it back, and then anyone online, Melissa.
No, sir.
Okay, we'll get it back to Council for direction.
Mayor Hammond.
Pro Tem Gregory.
I move that we approve 26XXX, determining that public convenience will be served by the issuance of Type 21 ABC license for the business at located at 2401 Golden Hill Road.
Second.
Motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Discussion? All right, we'll call for the question, Melissa.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
No.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-1.
Very good. Well done, Sam. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
You bet.
Come back and see us.
Gladly.
Okay, item four on public hearings tonight is continued. That's going to be, I think, was that the one that we had continued first reading? Yeah, okay, continue from April 7th, introduction, first reading, title only. Chapter 21.52, Paso Robles Municipal Code, updating standards related to temporary, prohibited, and non-conforming signs. Darcy, you have that item for us?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. Darcy Delgado, I'll be providing the presentation for the zoning amendment for the sign ordinance. This is chapter 21.52. Really, the emphasis tonight is on non-commercial temporary signs or political signs. As I understand it, this it was continued at the last meeting because it got hung up on what are we really talking about tonight. So I'm going to dive into that a little bit more with some clarity. All right, so as I said, this is an amendment to the sign ordinance, chapter 21.52 of the zoning code. In short, this is a housekeeping item to ensure consistency with the latest laws and best practices. There are some proposed revisions to the chapter that are more minor, which are those updated definitions, provides clarity. It also helps with enforcement in general. But the highlight of the changes and what why we're here tonight, it was really spurred by the temporary non-commercial sign standards, most notably the political signs. And so as we're approaching the election season, getting this before the City Council so that we can, again, bring our ordinance up to best practices is really why we're here tonight. So I have just a slide to show you the temporary non-commercial sign changes. Again, there are other changes that are proposed. They are more minor in context, but I wanted to highlight this slide. Essentially, the changes to the non-commercial signs are defining the appropriate time, place, and manner for the temporary non-commercial signs, which again, we're really talking about the political signs. So you can see that the location of these signs are allowed on any property in residential zoning districts. They are allowed on private property only with the permission of the property owner. And in terms of size and quantity, temporary signs shall not exceed 6 square feet per linear foot of building or tenant space frontage. There is a duration and removal requirement. So it says that temporary non-commercial signs may be posted for a total of 90 days in a calendar year. But if a temporary non-commercial sign is related to a specific event, it would need to be removed no later than 7 days following the said event. Lastly, for speech, in each instance and under the same conditions to which this chapter permits any sign, a sign containing an ideological, religious, or other non-commercial speech shall be permitted wherever commercial signage is permitted. So I've included this as a blue underline that represents this is new text being added to the zoning code. And again, there are other changes, but we're really focusing on this tonight. Happy to dive into any questions after I wrap up my presentation. As mentioned, there are other cleanup items regarding definitions. So we need to clarify, you know, flashing and moving signs, vehicle or trailer mounted signs. There has been difficulty in years past on when there is a call from somebody from the public and code enforcement is going out. We need to make sure that these definitions are extremely clear because it has been a problem for staff to advise on what to do. Again, we're also updating definitions for obsolete signs, making sure it's clear that there can be no obstruction of ingress or egress, and also defining the signs that are in the public right of way. So as I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation there, this is a continued item from the April 7th, 2026 City Council hearing. There was an issue raised with regard to, you know, is this going to affect banner signs or feather flag signs, real estate signs? I noted that there were several items on the addendum for this public hearing item, concerns that this would somehow impact real estate signs as well as the A-frame portable sandwich board signs. There are no changes proposed to that would affect any of these signs. There are no changes also to the rules or enforcement procedures. So again, just pointing back to that we had a need to update the zoning codes, more specifically to political signs. We did roll in a few other changes, but we are not proposing any changes to the items listed on the screen. This slide is just generally pointing to that this this ordinance is not subject to the provisions of CEQA, and so we do not, in terms of CEQA, it is exempt. Okay, so here are some options for the City Council tonight. The first option would be to take no action, as this is a change to the zoning code. It is an ordinance. The second option would be to introduce this for first reading by title only, amending Chapter 21.52 of the Paso Robles Municipal Code. Lastly, you could provide alternative direction to staff. Our recommendation, hopefully with clarity tonight, is to introduce for first reading by title only the ordinance that would amend Chapter 21.52 of the Paso Robles Municipal Code. And I'm happy to entertain any questions.
All right. Thank you, Darcy. Questions of Darcy? Tim Gregory?
Yep. Darcy, thank you for clearing some of that up. So just for the record, open house signs for real estate offices are okay to put up temporarily for open houses?
So there's no changes to the enforcement. I don't believe that they were technically allowed, but there's also no changes proposed tonight. So if that's something that the council does want to address, that does seem unrelated to tonight's item, but certainly if there's changes that the council wants to see with those, but they're not affected by tonight's action.
That's just a question. So, and enforcement, is that done by Community Services Department or?
Yeah, there's a kind of a combination. Planning division will get calls, and if it's something on private property, we can handle reaching out to the owner who owns the signage. If it's something in the right of way, we would coordinate with the community services division.
Thank you.
Councilman Bausch.
Thank you. You mentioned political signs. That's one of the reasons we wanted to review this in a timely fashion. Can you recap exactly what we're supposed to take away as far as the changes to political signs? Just briefly.
Sorry, to the political signs?
So we're having changes to placement of political signs.
Yes.
And can you just recap and just short, brief, not?
Yes, so.
Those changes.
The changes are to point to best practices for time, place, and manner of political signs. And so we didn't have those standards previously. Now we would like to have them, and it really points to enforcement. If there's signs that are up from longer than 90 days, it wasn't super clear on what we would do or the size limitation. So we have better standards now, and this is just industry standards. So it all got packaged together. And keeping it out of the right-of-way, correct.
And having owner's permission.
Including owner's permission, yes.
Thank you,
okay. Any other questions, council? We'll bring it up to then the public for any questions on this one. Please come forward.
Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. I think I forgot my question walking up here. Election signs. I hope he's okay. Election signs. What did you just ask?
Just a recap.
Right, that distracted me. Well,
Linda,
I'm going to have to
address...
save it. It must have been a lie. That's what my mom would say. I can't remember the question now.
I stumble my way forward
here. Yes. We'll get you here.
Good evening, Council. Jim Irving, Paso Robles resident, 406 6th Street. Over 30 years as a real estate broker in this town. I'm interested to hear Darcy comment that there'd be no changes to certain things when the exhibit says, for instance, that feather signs would be prohibited. One of the first items under prohibited signs. My concern for the real estate community is that it's not clear within this language what is permitted or not permitted. It says temporary signs are limited to only two. Even in this day of MapQuest and everything else, many times we have listings that require more than two temporary signs, and that should be taken into consideration. I think this is the language that I've seen in the exhibits of proposed changes do not adequately address the issues that the real estate community is involved with here. And so I would ask staff to go back and maybe consult with the real estate community into the appropriate language or come up with something that we could weigh in on and say, yeah, because we don't want to get in trouble. We have many years ago, maybe before most of you were on the council, we went down this road with signs and real estate signs and then restricted it to the way it's been. You have one real estate sign on the subject property. You didn't have 20 of them showing you how to get to it that were left permanently, but we were allowed these temporary open house signs, and I want to make sure that that is protected for my community. That's it. Thank you, Darcy.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, I remembered my question, if it's okay. Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. Enforcement, last election we had some significant issues with signs on cars. So with enforcement, last election it was a police department that was coming out to the complaints of two large signs. I got a complaint myself about Chris Beal's sign and Sharon Roden's sign. So in this upcoming election, my question was going to be, how is enforcement going to be handled?
Thank you.
Sharon, welcome.
Sharon Roden, Paso Robles. I'm speaking as a private individual. In response to that last comment, the reference to the large sign was located on private property. There was another sign that was at TAPS. Both Mr. Rivera's sign and mine at the time were located on city property. Neither one of us were aware of that at the time. He since moved it back. So the private property issue is important. I was aware of that. Others were not. They didn't ask me. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Do we have anybody online on this one?
No, sir.
Okay, so we had a couple questions, Darcy. Maybe can you, again, I got quite a few emails as well on the real estate side of things here, clarifying only two signs. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit on that? And then the last question was enforcement and how it's handled. I'm assuming that's going to be on a complaint basis, but I'll let you guys explain.
Sure. And one thing I forgot to mention earlier is between the April 7th meeting and tonight, I did also meet with a member of Main Street to address some of the concerns, as I understand that Main Street brought up concerns at the last meeting. And so I forgot to mention that before, so I'm mentioning it now. So to answer the question about the real estate feather flag signs, so a feather flag sign, the traditional where it's, you know, it's a long feather, it looks like a feather, those are a prohibited sign type in the code. Now, I think that there's some, it's unclear because we haven't been doing enforcement on these for, I would say, since 2017, 2018. It's the last time council had indicated to Planning Division staff that we wanted to clean those up. So usually when somebody calls, and if this was somebody like from a real estate agency, I would say probably better to do more like a sandwich board sign, since those are regulated under the, it's Title 11, since they're not under the sign code. If they're going to invest in signage, they should probably invest in signage that is allowed. But at this point, it is low on the priority. So if somebody is investing in a feather flag sign or sign other temporary signage that is not defined as allowed in the zoning code, it is low on the list of priority, and so staff is not actively calling these out, and members of the public are not also calling them out. So I think it would take the council to make future changes if they're looking to specifically address feather flag signs. So hopefully that answers the question. And I heard that there was a comment of two. So feather flag signs, because they're not allowed, there would be no numerical value attached to it. And then for the question on how enforcement will be handled for this election year, typically for Planning Division staff, again, it's complaint driven. Now, I am not sure if Community Services has been advised by, in this case, I guess it would be the City Council, to do more active code enforcement. And perhaps Chris could answer that question.
Yeah, I'll jump in, and I'll maybe have Melissa jump in as well. But I know as we come upon election season, our office specifically, Melissa, will sit down, and as you all, I think, have gone through, we have a comprehensive program where Melissa is providing quite a bit of information to you, including what the sign regulations and ordinances look like, and hopes to help clarify where and where not signs can be placed ahead of the election season. I know hearing that and then what happens in the field can vary a little bit. And so when we do get, we have a team internally that addresses these types of temporary signage. And typically what we again try to do is do our best to determine whether or not a sign is placed in a legal manner. If it's in the city right of way or attached to a city fence, we know that. We can reach out, and 99% of the time that's taken care of almost immediately. Part of what we're looking to clean up tonight is those instances that we've come across, not just with election signs, but with other types of temporary signs where it's not so clear as to where those are specifically located and for how long they're up. And that's simply what this cleanup does, is to help answer the question of, you know, how do we do enforcement. This helps kind of narrow down some of the variables that staff has faced over the last few election seasons. Particularly, but again, it applies to all temporary signs. So that would be, you know, that's probably a little bit more information. I'm happy to kind of dive into the details if you'd like me to, but this helps clarify some things on staff's end, and hopefully clarifies for all future candidates a little bit more what the intent of the ordinance is and where the intent of these signs to be placed are. I would say, and just to reiterate, the other elements of the sign ordinance that have been talked about both last time and this time, feather signs, A-frame signs, we're not touching those sections of the code. If there are questions or a need to look into that, we can certainly take that as feedback. That would necessitate probably a different discussion and at a later time. The intent, again, with this minor cleanup was to get at some of those most commonly raised questions and issues that staff is facing, and trying to equitably apply our sign code.
Yeah.
You know, throughout the year.
Yeah, give you some tools to work with. Yeah, more to find.
Mayor?
Pro Tem Gregory.
So I'd like to make a motion on this, but a question first.
Yeah, we're done discussion.
So my question is, if we were to approve this item, the council could listen to future issues from the real estate folks or whatever to adjust this ordinance, correct?
Certainly.
Okay.
Okay, Pro Tem, or no, actually.
Great segue. I would propose, in the interest of getting this motion passed tonight, understand that some of the confusion comes from feather sign that's there, you know, that's 12 feet tall permanently versus, you know, a feather sign that's considerably smaller and there for a few hours. And same with the small A-frame signs that realtors use for open house. It is confusing. You know, I tried to go back and look at it from a realtor standpoint, from a city council member's standpoint, and I think the solution is pass this tonight and then create either an ad hoc committee or something to come back at a later date. It's not, the feather signs aren't a real high priority. I don't think this is a real high priority on enforcement, but I think, as Mr. Irving stated, realtors want to do the right thing, and it's really hard to comply to do the right thing the way it's stated today. So bring it back at a later date, and let's get it encoded so that it's there for black and white. Everybody can live by those rules. That would be my recommendation.
Okay. Any other discussion on council?
I'll make a motion that we introduce the first reading by title only of ordinance 4XXX, amending chapter 21.52 of the Paso Robles Municipal Code.
Second with an amendment. We have a form of ad hoc committee to address the realtors.
Yeah, sometime in the future.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion by Gregory, second by Bausch, to approve the item with a add-on to form an ad hoc in the future to review this and clarify probably more for, I think, that real estate industry, I think, is the one that I saw more.
Yeah, right.
And also, I think, too, again, my personal knowledge is during the election signs, people are like putting signs without permission on property. That is a huge one, and knowing where to put a sign, and also if you have permission of the property owner to do so. So
for the record, it was Public Works who removed the signs.
Yeah.
How would you know?
I watched them.
It has happened, yes.
No.
All right. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Discussion? Call for the question, Melissa.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, yeah. Darcy, yeah, we want to do a 5-minute break, but you have the next one. You're a doubleheader also here, so. Okay, 5-minute break.
AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
Tonight's city council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Franklin Roosevelt died too soon to witness Germany's final surrender in World War II. But only a week after his death, in mid-April of 1945, British and American troops had captured Nuremberg, while Russian forces surrounded Berlin. Having named Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz as his successor, Adolf Hitler, along with his new wife, Eva Braun, committed suicide in his Berlin bunker on April 30th. On May 2nd, Red Army troops captured Berlin. Shortly after midnight Eastern Time on May 7th, 1945, news of Germany's official unconditional surrender was heard over the Mutual Network, during an interview program featuring actor Helmut Dentin.
The Boyer part, which of course was very thrilling and a bit of good news for me.
Wonderful.
So I don't know what my career...
From the Mutual Newsroom in New York, a bulletin from London, a French communique broadcast by the Paris radio said today that a truce has been concluded in the battle for the French Atlantic port of La Rochelle and that the Germans have returned 175 French prisoners. And of course, you heard the earlier bulletin, the BBC recorded at 8.09 a.m. Eastern Wartime, a Radio Flensburg German broadcast quoting the German foreign minister as announcing that the German high command accepts unconditional surrender. The Flensburg radio on the German-Danish border said the German surrender decision was reported by Count Ludwig Schwerin von Krosigk, German foreign minister appointed only last week. More news as fast as it is received. Now back to the program in progress.
Well, Helmut, you were in the Austrian army, weren't you?
Good morning from the White House in Washington. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
This is a solemn but a glorious hour. I only wish that Franklin D. Roosevelt had lived to witness this day. General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations. The flags of freedom fly all over Europe.
For the second time in 30 years, much of the world had mobilized to defeat Germany's war machine, but at a terrible cost. Determined not to let it happen again, the Allied forces partitioned Germany into two separate states. Yet this partition would itself become the focus of a new kind of global conflict, the Cold War.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Welcome to Heroes of the Air, true stories of those who flew for America and earned the nation's supreme military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Heroes of the Air is brought to you by the Air Force Association, an independent nonprofit aerospace organization which promotes public understanding of the role aerospace power plays in our national defense. Your host for Heroes of the Air is Gene Pell.
The fighter pilot Ace was perhaps the most dashing of heroes during World War II. Those American pilots responsible for multiple enemy kills were known to millions who followed their heroics through magazines and newsreels. One of them was Army Air Corps Major Thomas B. McGuire, Jr. of the 13th Air Force. Over Luzon, the Philippine Islands, December 25th and 26th, 1944. Major McGuire had volunteered to lead a squadron of 15 P-38s as top cover for heavy bombers striking Mabalacat Airdrome that Christmas morning. His formation came under attack by a superior force of Japanese fighters. In the ensuing action, he repeatedly flew to the aid of embattled comrades, driving off enemy assaults while himself under attack and at times outnumbered 3-1. Even after his guns jammed, he continued the fight by forcing a hostile plane into his wingman's line of fire. Before heading back to the base, he had downed 3 Zeros. The next day, he again volunteered to lead escort fighters on a mission to heavily defended Clark Field. During the morning's action, he again exposed himself to attacks so that he might rescue a crippled bomber. In rapid succession, he shot down 1 enemy plane, parried the attack of 4 Zeros, one of which he destroyed, then single-handedly engaged 3 more enemy planes, downing 1 of them. He finished the mission with yet another kill, his 38th victory in aerial combat. It was to be his last. 2 weeks later, while leading a voluntary fighter sweep over Los Negros Island, he risked an extremely hazardous maneuver at low altitude in an attempt to save a comrade from attack. He crashed and was reported missing in action. By his gallant initiative, deep and unselfish concern for the safety of others, and his heroic determination to destroy the enemy at all costs, Major McGuire set an inspiring example. For his conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity against the enemy at the risk of his own life, above and beyond the call of duty, Army Air Corps Major Thomas B. McGuire was posthumously awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor.
The Air Force Association is proud to bring you Heroes of the Air, dedicated to those who earned the nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Their service and sacrifice reflect an ideal that puts others and country above self. AFA salutes all men and women in the Air Force who so selflessly serve our country each day at home and around the globe. Heroes of the Air is produced by Pelcom Communications in association with Radio America.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Come and listen to my story, if you will, I'm gonna tell about a gang of fellers from down at Nashville. First I'll start with old Red Foley doing the Chattanooga Shoe. We can't forget Hank Williams with them good old Hussic Blues. It's time for Roy Acuff to go to Memphis on his train with Minnie Pearl and Rod Brassfield and Lazy Jim Day. Turn on all your radios, I know that you will wait. Hear little Jimmy Dickon sing, take an old coal tater and wait. There'll be guitars and fiddles, Earl Scruggs and his banjo too. Stubbs number, two wrongs won't make a right at the Grand Ole Opry every Saturday night. There was Uncle Dave making his gold tooth and plug hat. Cowboy Cope was singing tragic romance. Signed, sealed, and delivered with Sam and Kurt McGee. And the master ceremony was a Mr. George D. Hayes. There was Lonzo and Oscar a popping bubble gum. George Morgan singing candy kisses, yum yum. Got a hole in my bucket, bringing in that Georgia mail. We'll sing the sunny side of the mountain and dance to the chicken reel. There'll be guitars and fiddles and banjo picking too. Bill Monroe singing out the Kentucky blues. Ernest Tubbs' number, two wrongs won't make a right at the Grand Ole Opry every Saturday night. You can talk about your singers in all kinds of ways, but none could sing the old songs like with his old hound dog guitar and the famous blue tail fly. String beans with Hank's knowing old fiddling chubby wives. There'll be guitars and fiddle, Earl Scruggs and his banjo too. Bill Monroe singing out the Kentucky blues. Ernest Tubbs' number, two wrongs won't make a right at the Grand Ole Opry every Saturday night.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
With pen in hand, you sign your name. Today at 5, I'll be on that train, and you'll be free, and I will be alone, so alone. If you think we can't find the love we once knew, if you think I can't make everything up to you, then I'll be gone, and you'll be on your own. you'll be on your own. Can you take good care of Jenny? Can you take her to school every day? Can you teach her how to play all the games that little girls play? Hear what I say. Can you teach her how to roll up her hair? Can you make sure each night that she says her prayers? Well, if you can do these things, then maybe she won't miss me. Maybe she won't miss me. And tonight, as you lay in that big lonely bed.
We can reassemble, everyone. Looks like, yeah. Darcy, looks like we're on number five, approval of Oak Tree for Ardmore project, including zone map amendment, special plan development overlay designation, and an oak tree removal.
Yes. Good evening again, Darcy Delgado. I'll be providing the report for the Oak at Ardmore project. This is a 154-unit residential subdivision. Typically, we handle the development plans and subdivisions at the Planning Commission, but this is a special project that requires some additional zoning overlays, a rezone, and an oak tree removal. And so everything has been packaged up as one project. Just to note that this was reviewed by the Planning Commission previously, and they did make a recommendation to the City Council for approval, so that is noted in your staff report. I'll go ahead and get started. I'm going to do a really high-level overview of this project because we have the applicant present tonight, and they are going to provide a little bit more detail, so I don't want to be too duplicative in that in our presentations. So the applicant here is Covelop Inc. and MD3 Investments. They are looking, or they have applied for the entitlements for 2930 Union Road. So this is in the northeast portion of the city. You can see some adjacent locations, so Daniels Woodland, we have Spur, the Fire Station 3, of course. I've noted on the map the future Marriott, which is a Fairfield Inn, and then to the further to the east, you have the Barney Schwartz Park. So just to get your bearings, we're at Ardmore and Ardmore. The current zoning designation for the project site is a commercial light industrial, so it's C3. It has a plan development overlay, as well as a District F overlay, which I'll get into here shortly. And then the current land use designation is commercial service. So you might be wondering why we're talking about a residential project when the zoning is commercial industrial. So I'm going to give you some background on the subject site, but leading into, the applicant is asking for a rezone request to permit residential uses by right. So this project this site was originally entitled for the Covelop Industrial Project. So they received their entitlement in 2024. This was a 240,000 square foot industrial complex. The applicant around 2024 started making new plans, essentially, because the city started engaging with the Cal Poly students. They had come up with this vision plan for reusing this area next to North Chandler Ranch. We have a multifamily accelerator program that we're looking for infill sites for residential. And so everything that the city was kind of, we were exploring in end of 2024 after they had gotten their industrial complex approved, was kind of pointing to maybe we can put residential here. Also in October of 2024, the applicant, Covelop and MD3 Investments, they looked into an age-restricted housing concept plan. That did not move forward. But ultimately, they landed with the current project, which is entitled Oak at Ardmore Townhouses. And we've been working on that 2025 to present. And I just will note that back in November of 2025, the City Council had previously seen a very high-level version of tonight's presentation, limited information, of course, but essentially approving a reservation of some general plan surplus units for the site. So that gave the applicant some assurance as they were going through the development review process with the planning department that these units could be earmarked if it was successfully if it successfully attained all the approvals. So you may remember that from the end of last year. Okay, so there are a series of entitlements being requested in order to move this development plan for these townhouses forward. What I want to start with first is the rezone. So rezone 25-03 has two components. One of the components is establishing a mixed-use overlay. This is necessary to allow residential uses by right. This is something that, of course, requires the City Council action. This would be a change to the zoning map. And also with that is a correlation for allocating the an actual allocation, not just a reservation, but allocating the surplus density units to this site for this project. And so what I've included on this slide is, of course, the map showing the proposed mixed-use overlay with the surrounding uses. But then also you can see that table, which says it's a surplus density unit cycle 2 tracking table. So this goes back to our 2020 housing element when we kind of creatively we were looking for any extra units that that were this surplus. It was the second time around that we had done this. And what we had our consultant, she had some methodologies, but she came up with there were 345 total units that could be allocated by the City Council, essentially to address any upzoning or rezoning needs where we saw infill residential as being having high potential. So you might remember we successfully, with the housing element, we rezoned two parcels to include that mixed-use overlay, and that included the Highland Center site that's off of Niblick Road next to Highlands Church, and then also the Woodland Plaza pad that is where Riverwalk Terrace is now. So previously that was just a commercial zoning, or both of them were commercial zoning, so regional commercial. And so without that mixed-use overlay, they would not have been able to proceed with a residential project. So we're doing the same thing, essentially, with this project. And as I said, there is a request for the rezone, but also an allocation of units. And so there are two different resolutions that are for those two different actions. The second component of Rezone 25-03 is establishing a special plan development overlay. This is going to be Overlay K. And in our zoning code, we have several special development overlays, special plan development overlays. And they're really when you have unique zoning. And this is exactly what the zoning code is allows the City Council to do, is when you have a unique project that requires unique zoning, there are stipulations and standards that that we're bound by. But essentially, you know, in this case, townhomes require zero lot line development. If we didn't develop the special plan development overlay, the project could not move forward because the mixed-use overlay and the the mixed-use overlay alone, it requires setbacks between structures. So inherently, we have to also include this special plan development overlay just to be looking at zero lot line development with this townhome model. Additionally, with the overlay that they're requesting, they kind of wanted to override another overlay F. Because overlay F, I'm going to go back a slide, applies to everything you see with that yellow outline. So overlay F is essentially all those properties in that yellow boundary, they're all C3. And there, if you know, so North Chandler Ranch, we have future residential. We don't have any plans for it now, but there is going to be future residential. So the overlay F is really talks about compatibility of the commercial with when it's adjacent to residential. And so their overlay F had some stipulations about requiring masonry walls anytime a C3 zone property is adjacent to a residential zone property. That helps with compatibility of, you know, future development and offsetting any maybe construction visual visuals or noise between the commercial and the residential. So because the property is adjacent to future residential zone property, with their request, they are also asking to eliminate the requirement for a masonry wall because they are a residential project. And so residential next to residential, the theory is we don't need to build that wall. But the only way to get out of that is to request it as part of this special zoning request. And then lastly, with the overlay K, it's really just going to establish the minimum lot size, the parking requirements, all the common recreation amenities that are specific to this project. So for any reason this project didn't move forward down the road, future developer would be bound to this project, or they would have to make amendments, and it seems like the City Council would be interested to know what changes would want to be made. So so that is why we've embedded those into these the special overlay. Okay, so moving on, there are other entitlements that are part of this package. So the first bullet point is the development plan, the conditional use permit, and a modification. In short, this is to establish the 154-unit residential development along with those development standards, architectural criteria, site planning for parking, landscaping, amenities, the clubhouse, the pool, the playground, the common areas. I will touch on, not very often do we have a residential development that needs a use permit. The reason the use permit is coming up is, again, this was C3 underlaid zoning, and it required those properties to also obtain a use permit. So had this been a commercial project, and it was at one point, right, they had to get a development plan and a use permit to ensure compatibility with surrounding uses. We can't really get rid of it, but it doesn't serve a whole lot of purpose. It is embedded in with the PD. With plan development 2514. And then the modification request is because this development has, they have some specific development standards that they were looking for relief from, they had to request the modification, so we built it into the development plan. And those are specific development standards, including roof and eave designs. They had some changes to their retaining wall heights that the Planning Commission was able to approve to increase the retaining wall height. Over 6 feet, and lastly, there was a modification regarding pedestrian-oriented frontages, some relief from that for a portion of the project. So these are things that the Planning Commission was able to approve, but because it was elevated, this whole project has to be elevated because we need the rezone and we need the allocation of units in order for this to move forward. I just wanted to note that what the Planning Commission had previously seen, and also what they approved. So then moving on, we also have a vesting tentative tract map, 3255. This specific entitlement is going to establish the 154 individual fee simple residential lots. There are also 10 common lots, and as well as the proposed right-of-way for the Ardmore Road extension, which I will dive into that in the next slide or two. And the very last entitlement is an oak tree removal, as we know that those can only be approved by the City Council. So again, this is a package deal, so we don't want to approve any development plans without also acknowledging oak tree removals and vice versa. You wouldn't want to approve oak tree removals without knowing what the development plan is, so that's why it's all included. They are requesting the removal of six valley oak trees, which total 265 inches, but they are meeting the requirement to replant 34 two-inch diameter mitigation oak trees, and I believe they're actually going above and beyond that. When the applicant gets up, I believe he can touch on that a little bit more. Okay, so here is the development plan in greater detail. The applicant is proposing to, if approved, they would propose to do this in two phases. So phase one would be the more northerly portion. So just to the, I guess that would be the west, is the Daniels Woodland Factory. And then phase two is a little bit further south, and that is adjacent to the Spur Construction Yard. With the different phases, they have some amenities that are going to be provided. So in phase one, they have a community building, they have a pool, there's some other outdoor areas for people who live there. But the basin that's adjacent to this community building, it's going to serve for drainage, but also it will serve as a recreational area, so it's kind of a seasonal basin, but that can also be used other times of the year. In phase two, they are proposing a tot lot playground, so a single tot lot playground with their description included a minimum of 17 play features. And so that would be required with the construction of the 100th, or prior to the 100th unit being final, they would have to provide that. This will serve both phases. So it is one, one community and one plan, but it is separated and bisected by the Ardmore Road extension. Speaking of the Ardmore Road extension, this will be a public road. It will eventually connect to Airport Road and North Chandler Ranch. So I just pulled this from the city's GIS map and included the circulation layer. So if you have any questions about this, we can touch back on it, but I just wanted to note that that was a question at Planning Commission to understand if it was, this was a public road, and it is. Other internal streets are going to be private. So airport would be most closely aligned, I believe, with the green. Is that correct, Warren?
Yes.
The green line would be Airport Road. Yes, very close. So this, and this is, you know, orderly development, how we get the future Ardmore extension to then punch out to the future Airport Road. So so this would be, this project would be, you know, helping construct that. Another component with this project is an affordability aspect. So as part of the entitlement project, staff and the applicant, we coordinated on an affordable housing component. This was really kind of coming out of the November 2025 meeting that we had with the council when we were talking about reserving the units. There was an interest for there to be something more. And so the applicant came up with a system that's essentially modeled after the County of San Luis Obispo's Regional Housing Incentive Program. I'm not going to read all of this, but it is a condition of approval, what you see italicized and in quotes. But essentially, they're proposing a one-time payment of $60,000 to the City of Paso Robles that can be used for future programs that that can satisfy the project's affordable housing contribution associated with the entitlement. So it's something new. We don't have anything, any standard with the city, but this is a good first step into possibly, in, you know, finding some solutions for affordable housing. And I know the applicant can explain it in a little bit greater detail of how the system works for the County of SLO, but wanted to note it here for the City Council. I'm not really going to touch too much on the architecture. It is a modern farmhouse architectural type. In short, the Planning Commission was very pleased with the different variation of the units. The being that these are air-gapped units, there were, again, I mentioned that they had asked for some modifications to roof and eave requirements. And again, it's with townhomes that are at zero lot line, there were some things that they just couldn't achieve. And so it's, it made sense on what they were asking for. But the Planning Commission did approve the architecture, and there were no issues with the design of the project in terms of architecture. But one thing I will note that came up at Planning Commission was one of the modifications that was requested initially. We started with a different wall. And so just to give you some context, if you're standing on Ardmore, it would be the north-south extension on Daniel's Woodland property, looking at this vacant property, you would, this is what you would see. So this would be facing east. So
is this just on phase two?
So this would be phase one.
Okay, there, phase one and two will have that block wall.
Just phase one, it's just a portion of the project. I actually have, let me see if I can advance. Here we go.
Yeah.
So this, maybe I should have included this one first. So there is a fencing plan for this project. So the red, which I know it's kind of hard to see, but there is a 6-foot tall perimeter wood slat fence around the majority of the site. And those are, that's a rear yard fence. In blue is the vinyl, the 6-foot tall vinyl coated micro mesh chain link fence for the, there's two basins that will be fenced and not functional. But where you see the PC recommended 6-foot tall wall in green, that is the backyard of two buildings that the code had said needed to have a pedestrian oriented frontage on a main street. Well, the way they designed this project, their frontage is actually off of that alley. And so originally the applicant wanted a 6-foot tall wall, but staff was working with them to do a 3-foot tall wall. Planning Commission recommended a 6-foot tall wall again, so we were kind of back and forth. But ultimately, going back to the other slide, the applicant proposed this masonry wall. So we are, as part of the project, they were asking for this modification. Planning Commission was supportive of it and had asked staff to work with the applicant to come up with something to bring to City Council for final determination. So staff feels that the proposed wall, it's just for those two buildings, and so it would be across from the Daniels Woodland factory. It's not for the entire site. It's appropriate, but we were thinking we added a condition for there to be some like pilasters every 25 feet.